Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm now joined by Lawrence Korb, who was a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a senior advisor to the Center of Defense Information. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense from 1981 to 1985, and is the author of A New National Security Strategy in an Age of Terrorists, Tyrants, and Weapons of Mass Destruction. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Korb.
It's nice to be with you.
And what did you think the president achieved in terms of bridging over this inherent contradiction that where this is a military tactic in search of a strategic rationale, and the extent to which he said that we are not targeting Gaddafi, at the same time we're assisting the opposition?
Well, I thought he handled it very well because he separated the military objective from the overall strategic objective, which he said will not be achieved by military means. He said the military objective was to keep Gaddafi from killing his own people, and he's done that, and we're going to keep the pressure on him so he, you know, can't regroup and try it again. But in fact, in the final analysis, removing him can't be done by military force. And I thought it was particularly telling when he said, well, we tried regime change by force in Iraq, and, you know, look how much it cost us and how long it's taken.
But it seems to me that, and I've spoken to a number of foreign policy experts and military strategists since this, I hesitate in using the word war, since that appears to be a kind of politically incorrect term in relation to Libya. But most people seem to think that the only strategic rationale is the removal of Gaddafi.
Well, it is, but it's not going to be done by military means. I mean, you know, our rationale in the Cold War was to get to stop Soviet communist expansionism and, you know, for the Soviet Empire to collapse. We didn't win it militarily, but militarily, you know, we had a large military force, and we, you know, spent the trillions of dollars developing weapons and everything. That was our military objective, but our strategic objective was different. The military was to contain them. The strategic was for them to disintegrate. And I think that's what he tried to point out. I mean, I think, you know, too often we tend to think that military force is the only way to bring about an objective. It's important, but it's not the only way.
So the fact that some of the compound where he apparently Gaddafi has this enormous compound in Libya, the fact that it's been struck and that there are reports that his son Hamis, who heads up the 32nd Brigade, which is supposedly the best equipped and trained unit in the Libyan military, that he's supposedly been killed so far, that is not the intention, that somehow or other we're going to figure out a way for the Libyans to get rid of this guy, and I don't imagine they're going to do it in a particularly constitutional way, shall we say.
Well, I think what the president said, at least the way I understood it, was that he said that, look, you know, we've undermined his military capability. He's not going to be able to hurt his own people. We have an embargo. We dried up his financial assets, and time is not on his side. And then hopefully the Libyan people and even people around Gaddafi will be able to convince him that it doesn't make any sense for him to stay, you know, any longer. And I think that's what he was talking about. But he said, you know, he didn't give a timeline or anything like that.
And of course, you were Lawrence Korb were Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration when Ronald Reagan unleashed U.S. aircraft on Gaddafi in response to the bombing of a discotheque in Germany, and in later, of course, Gaddafi was behind the Pan Am bombing, for which he didn't ever admit it, but paid off a lot of people. And his own justice minister, who's recently defected, says that the orders unequivocally came from Gaddafi. But in that instance, I believe that Gaddafi was tipped off by Benito Craxi, the Italian prime minister at the time, and thus escaped regime change, at least by bombs. Any sense that there's any divisions within NATO this time, and that this kind of ambiguity over regime change, either by proxy or by purpose, has fractured the alliance?
Well, I think if you go back to the Reagan thing, Reagan made no secret about it. He was after him because of, the killing of the American servicemen. I mean, and there had been a couple other things. His planes had come out and engaged in combat with ours. But I think now, no, there's no appetite to target him directly, like, you know, his house or, you know, the tent where he lives. However, if, in fact, we go after legitimate military targets, like a command center, for example, and he's there, well, then that becomes, you know, a secondary benefit. Would you like that? Sure, I think so. But, you know, you got lawyers and stuff. You may remember, you know, the British planes turned around because they didn't want to kill civilians. I think, you know, the way we do things, and even today with the drones, in the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, we try and, you know, minimize the danger to civilians and do not target heads of state.
So, Lawrence Korb, let me run through some of the statements that the president made to get your opinion on whether his reasons stated are sufficient for U.S. intervention, which the president was at pains to. He recognizes, I think, that there's a fairly substantial constituency of doubt, not just in the political opposition, but in America in general. He did say that if a massacre were to take place in Benghazi, that would not be in our national interest. He did say there's a important strategic interest in not having refugees flood into Egypt and Tunisia, both newly liberated countries in a fragile state of transition, and that he didn't want to hurt these new democratic impulses in the Middle East, and that he didn't want to give aid and comfort to people like they specifically mentioned the Iranian regime that have used force to reverse these kind of aspirations and successfully have reversed the aspirations of their people in terms of freedom.
Well, I think he laid it out because people are going to ask us, David Rothkopf, your previous guest, did, well, if you're going to go here, why not there? Why don't you go to Iran? Why don't you go to Syria? And I think what he was saying is, look, we were asked to do it. We could do it. The international community, our allies and the Arabs, wanted us to do it. The people there asked. So by doing it, we get benefits to ourselves. For example, you know, people the size of the city of Charlotte, as he mentioned, you know, would not have been massacred. You don't destabilize Tunisia and Egypt, and you don't send a signal to countries like Iran and Syria that this is acceptable behavior.
So while he did not announce an Obama doctrine, Lawrence Korb, towards the end there, particularly at the very end, when he sort of more or less suggested, I think, that our traditional foreign policy of realpolitik, where we act according to our so-called interests, but not according to our ideals, and that perhaps we are in a new era now where acting according to our ideals is in fact in our interests, and the other point was that he almost was endorsing a kind of George Herbert Walker Bush policy of coalition building.
Well, he is. I mean, there's no doubt about the fact that if you're looking for an Obama doctrine, the first thing is, you know, multilateral if we can, unilateral only if we must. And he did make that point about it. U.S. interests were directly affected, and, you know, we would take care of it. And the second thing is that, you know, other people can't continue to be free riders. I mean, he made that clear. We're not the only ones impacted by this. And so, you know, we got to get them to share things. You may remember, I think, during the campaign for the presidency, he talked about how much he admired President Bush, and then he said the first President Bush. Because in the first Gulf War, you know, we got 200,000 troops from other nations, including Syria and Egypt, and we got monetary contributions from all over the world because they were dependent on you know, the oil from, you know, Saudi Arabia, which was threatened. And in fact, that war, we actually didn't cost us anything. We collected more than we spent.
Well, that's been a long time since that happened. We're spending, $7 billion a month in Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's $100 billion a year in Afghanistan. It's over $1 trillion in Iraq so far, and that's the direct cost, not to mention the indirect, which is, you know, the veterans will be taken care of and the money we had to borrow to, you know, to finance it. So I think that is a consideration. And at the end, President Obama talked about, you know, we've got to be strong at home in order to be able to do these things around the world. And one of the ways is that you have to minimize the cost of these operations. And he did talk about the cost and benefits. And I think you've got to do that.
Well, just in closing then, Lawrence Korb, do you think that when President Obama said that he was convinced that our failure to act in this case, the U.S. would pay a higher price, our earlier guest David Rothkopf seemed to imply that we're going to pay a higher price for this intervention, and you know the downside scenarios are a protracted civil war, a country split between the East and the West, with oil in the middle, et cetera, et cetera. So how, obviously, I'm not asking you to look into a crystal ball, but what's your sense of whether this will end up being a win for the president? Because at the rate the rebels are going in terms of taking back territory, this thing may well be over soon. And I'm convinced that there aren't too many people in Libya that support Gaddafi, but I could be wrong.
Well, I think nobody knows exactly how, but I think the president was right. Had we not acted, our European allies would have been upset. The Arabs, you know, had asked us to do it. Obviously, the people in Libya. So those were all benefits. And by doing it, we weakened Gaddafi. I mean, he may hang on for a while. Nobody knows how long. But the fact of the matter is he is much weaker. And, you know, people in the Arab world, I think, will say, gee, this is much better than when you went into Iraq, you know, under false pretenses. And the other, since it's an international coalition, if, let's say, what David talked about does come through, or it ends up like Lebanon, it won't be a U.S. loss. It'll be the international community.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, okay. Lawrence Korb.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Korb, who's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the head of J Street, Jeremy Ben-Ami, who had to testify before a very hostile committee of the Israeli Knesset on Wednesday.